From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Jeff Bezos, the world's richest man, is laughing all the way to the bank. Bezos' company, Amazon, is one of 91 corporations that did not pay federal income taxes on their 2018 U.S. income. And that is a direct result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that the Republican Party and their president passed at the end of 2017. A new report by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy examined corporate tax avoidance in the first year that the law took effect. The results are the opposite of what Republicans promised and in line with what critics of the law feared, that wealthy corporations, many of which already receive massive public subsidies and take advantage of existing tax code loopholes, would win a windfall from the new law. My guest is Matt Gardner, a senior fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy and co-author of the report, which is titled Corporate Tax Avoidance in the First Year of the Trump Tax Law. Welcome to the program, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
So how did you actually do this report? What was the data that you used to examine what this first year of the tax law being in effect would actually mean for corporations?
All publicly traded corporations are required to file annual financial reports with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And the SEC mandates that companies tell everyone, shareholders, stockholders, the public, some basic information about their tax-paying behavior. Not super detailed, but they're required to give their best estimate of what their federal income tax bill is going to be each year and how much U.S. income generated that tax bill. So that's all you need in order to come up with a sense of effective tax rates, what companies are paying as a share of their income.
So there is a difference between an effective tax rate and a statutory tax rate. Can you explain that and how it actually plays out in this report? Because there is a big difference.
Sure. It's an important distinction, both in terms of the way the tax system used to work and the way it works now. Before 2017, we had a statutory tax rate, a legal tax rate of 35% for corporations, which meant that companies were supposed to pay 35% of their income in tax. What we knew even then was that they weren't doing that, that when you took the effective tax rate, that is the dollar amount of taxes as a share of their total income, it was always a lot lower. So there was this gap between the legal tax rate or the statutory tax rate and the effective tax rate.
And that was because they were able to take advantage of loopholes and use, you know, whatever, offshore their profits and just a variety of ways to reduce their tax bill?
Exactly. And in fact, what that meant exactly was that companies were finding ways to shelter roughly half of their income from tax. And so you had a 35% tax rate, which was, I'm oversimplifying a little bit, being applied to 50% of their income. And now in 2018 and going forward, we have a dramatically lower statutory tax rate. They cut the legal rate from 35 to 21%. It was an open question in the wake of the 2017 tax cut whether the effective tax rate was going to change in the same way, because some of the tax breaks that companies were using to shelter half of their profits from tax, well, some of those got made bigger. At least one of them actually went away, and a couple of them were modified in smaller ways. So it was an open empirical question whether these effective tax rates were going to continue to be way lower than the legal tax rates. And the number one finding of our new report is that, unfortunately, the same sort of tax avoidance, the same sort of tax base reduction is happening right now. When you have a 21% tax rate, as we now do, and we find that on average companies are paying 11.3% of their U.S. income in taxes, that does mean that companies are still finding ways to shelter about half of their profits from tax right now.
Wow. So their effective tax rate dramatically lowered as well. Then there were 91 corporations that did not pay any federal income taxes. And I mentioned Amazon, but there are 90 others. Who are these corporations, if you can just, you know, throw out a few names? And how did they manage that?
Sure. So Amazon and Netflix are the two that have generated the most press, but these companies come from a variety of industries. Halliburton is another, Starbucks is another, General Motors. I mean, name the industry and there's a company in there that found a way to do this. As far as how they did it, I think the most important thing to note is that it all appears to be completely legal. They appear simply to be using the tax breaks that these companies asked Congress to enact for them, and that Congress did. That is certainly not to take all the blame off these companies, for reasons I'm happy to talk about more. I think it's pretty clear that Congress enacted a lot of these tax breaks precisely because these companies told them to. They said, if you do it, we'll create lots of capital investment. But that's the first thing to understand, is that there's every reason to believe that these companies are simply using the legal tax breaks that were made available to them. There's no indication of legal wrongdoing.
So there were 379 corporations that you examined in this report. How did those corporations get part of, you know, get to be in this report? I understand that they were all profitable corporations, but why just 379?
Because we started with the Fortune 500, generally understood to be a barometer of the corporate community overall, and a group that represents a really large share of overall economic income in the U.S. And then we made one sensible reduction from that. We threw out any company that reported a U.S. loss, that didn't make a profit in 2018. And there's a sensible reason for that, which is that the corporate income tax is meant to be a tax on profitable companies. If you don't make money, you shouldn't pay the tax. So we're focusing here just on the companies that one really would expect to pay a substantial amount of tax in 2018.
So of those 379 companies whose average effective tax rate was 11.3%, 91 had an effective tax rate of zero.
Zero or less, that's right.
Zero or less, meaning that they might have gotten returns from the government?
Yes, and we can't know whether they actually got like a giant cartoon check back from the government or whether they chose to carry these taxes, negative taxes, forward or backwards to other years. It's a sort of a parallel process to what we do when we file our taxes every year, right? If you get a refund, you can ask for a check or you can carry the balance forward to future years. But we do know that these companies, all 91 of them, racked up enough tax breaks that they were able to get down to zero, and they still had a big pile of tax breaks left over. And what they did with those, we can't know without seeing the tax returns.
Now, politicians like to make claims and promises before they get a law passed and hope that no one actually checks them on whether those played out after the laws are in effect. So compared to what Republicans actually said this law would bring, what has it actually delivered, at least in its first year, in terms of corporate tax profits or corporate tax rates?
Well, Congress was promised that two things were going to happen from two very different sources when they passed this bill. One, they knew from all the official revenue estimators, was that this was going to cost a lot of money in the short run. It was viewed as a $100 billion revenue loss going forward. The other was that, and this is from the business lobbyists who supported the bill, was that we would see an explosion of economic growth, that we'd see capital investment really getting boosted, that we see a lot of job creation, that we'd see a rebirth of manufacturing capacity in the U.S. And in practice, none of those things have emerged. It's still early days. We have only 1 year of data under our belts. But there were some pretty concrete predictions made by some of these companies about the aggregate amount of capital investment we'd see. And we've seen at best a gentle upward slope in capital investment in the last year. Pretty much similar, I would say, to what happened in 2017, right before the tax cuts were enacted. So I guess the simplest thing to say is just that we've seen pretty much the same aggregate trends in job creation, in capital investment, in manufacturing that we saw before the tax cuts.
Matt, what about corporate tax subsidies? This is another area that your report examines. How exactly do we know what subsidies these corporations get? And what does a tax subsidy exactly mean?
A tax subsidy is just any provision of the law that reduces income taxes below what the tax rate would tell you they ought to be. So if a company paid exactly 21%, we say that it got no tax subsidies. The tax rates were doing all the talking. And if a company got a 0% tax rate, that means tax subsidies represent that entire difference between 21 and 0%. Now, the good news is that the SEC requires companies to make some basic disclosures about big legal factors that change their tax rate. And so we can say with some confidence that a huge driver, possibly the biggest driver in these companies paying low tax rates, is accelerated depreciation. This is the provision that lets companies write off the cost of their capital investments artificially fast or even immediately. The bad news is that there's an awful lot we don't know about the aggregate value of a lot of these tax breaks because, you know, the SEC's disclosures aren't that precise. They're meant to sort of figure out the broad factors affecting tax rates, not the very specific policies. And so we can't say with any certainty whether some of the tax breaks we know are harmful, like the research and development tax credit, which is targeting, which is giving breaks for some things we wouldn't really consider research, percentage depletion for oil companies, all these small but potentially egregious tax breaks. We can't really put a dollar value to them based on these reports. Mm.
Some of the ways in which companies reduce their tax bill is by giving their executives stock options. In addition to, of course, ridiculously obscene salaries, can you explain how companies do this and why are stock options tax deductible?
It's a very good question. We know why many companies have chosen to rely heavily on stock options, and it wasn't necessarily for the tax benefits. Early on, companies like Facebook and even Microsoft and Apple and Amazon didn't have an awful lot of money, and in lieu of paying their senior leaders, their execs in cash, they would give them stock options. The idea being that someday they'd be worth something. And the tax treatment that these stock options have been afforded is a little goofy because pretty much, I'm oversimplifying a tiny bit, but pretty much these companies can act when they give $1 million worth of stock options to their executives as if they've written a check to the senior leaders for that amount. And of course, there's no direct cash out of their pocket when they do so. But for financial accounting purposes, for tax purposes, they are allowed to pretend that they have. And so whatever the motivation for giving lots of stock options to their execs, whether it's to get around the caps on the deductibility of executive compensation, which apply to salaries but not to stock options, or whether it's simply because they didn't have the cash to pay their CEOs in regular salaries at that time. Either way, the use of stock options is generating some huge tax breaks for many of these companies, particularly companies in the tax sector, and it's reducing taxes by allowing them to write off a cost that is essentially an accounting fiction.
And just to reiterate what you said earlier, they are not pouring the extra capital that they might be sitting on because of their lowered tax bills into creating jobs on the scale that we were promised they would be creating. What about the fact that tax revenues are dramatically decreased as a result of this tax law? This was a predictable outcome of this tax law, that if you essentially give huge tax breaks to corporations, you are going to be, you know, draining the federal treasury, tax revenues will be much less than expenditures. We're already running a deficit government, which deficit hawks, you know, suddenly don't seem to care as much about under a Republican president as they did before, or others are using it as an excuse to cut social spending.
Well, there were two issues with the revenue loss. We knew, everyone knew from the official revenue estimates from the start that this was going to be a substantial reduction in corporate tax revenues in the short run. But there were two sort of conflating issues. One is that the first year revenue loss ended up being a lot bigger than all the official forecasts suggested. The hole got deeper. We don't know why, but we know that so far this tax bill is costing a lot more on the corporate side than it was ever officially forecast to. The other is that there was always this implicit and sometimes explicit promise made by corporate leaders that the economic growth we were talking about, the boom of capital investment and job creation, was going to indirectly have the classic supply side effect and boost corporate revenues going forward. That was never in the official revenue estimates, but I think it's fair to say that the folks in Congress and in the Trump administration who supported and spearheaded the move for this tax cut, they really wanted to believe that that was going to happen, that we were going to see this offsetting boom in corporate tax revenues that would make this not a revenue loser at all. And of course, there's no evidence so far that this supply side boom in revenues is happening or is ever going to happen. But that's what they had in mind.
Now, Matt, what are the recommendations that your organization, the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, make after, you know, producing this report and seeing the results? What would you like to see in order to address what is, you know, clearly unfair in terms of how corporations are benefiting far more than the rest of us?
The formula from a policy perspective is every bit as simple as it was in 2017. Politically, it's a little bit harder. What I mean by this is that from a policy perspective, in 2017, Congress had two jobs on the corporate tax front. One was to think systematically about the tax loopholes that were allowing effective tax rates to get so low, so far below the statutory rate, and get rid of the tax breaks that were ineffective. And then the second step would be to use some fraction of the extra revenue you're getting from closing those loopholes to maybe cut the rate a bit. What Congress did in 2017 was all the easy work and none of the hard work. They cut the tax rate, but did virtually nothing to eliminate these tax breaks. From a political perspective, that makes lawmakers' job a little bit more difficult going forward, because now, the next generation of lawmakers that try to deal with true corporate tax reform are going to have to deal with all the hard questions and will have fewer giveaways they can make because we've already cut the corporate tax rate. The good news is that this is a pretty clear case where what Congress broke, Congress can fix. Virtually every tax break companies have used to zero out their income taxes, the depreciation, stock option related, all the tax breaks we've been discussing, all of those were created by Congress. All of those can be reformed or repealed by Congress if they can only get the political will to do so.
Now, the place that we are at with corporate taxes being so low is already bad enough, but didn't Republicans want to build on the 2017 tax law by passing yet another package of laws, at the end of 2019? I understand that they failed, but they did sort of sneak some in attached to other bills.
Well, there are two things happening in the last couple of months that are worth mentioning in this context. One is that business as usual continues to proceed. And so even what I mean by that is that even as Congress has moved these really big pictures, like cutting the corporate tax rate, there are a host of smaller temporary tax incentives that are geared towards specific industries that have been temporary features of the tax code forever that get extended 1 year at a time. Congress, as part of a spending agreement earlier this week, just accepted the a bill that would extend many of these small tax breaks. And while these tax breaks are individually small, they are collectively quite harmful. They're a big part of the reason why the corporate income tax as a share of profits has plummeted over the past quarter century. Nobody views it as a big deal because it's sort of a death of thousand cuts thing. It's not some single policy initiative, but it's every bit as harmful as the 2017 tax cuts, and it's something that Congress just cheerfully did again earlier this week. The other thing is that, of course, it matters a lot what the Trump administration wants to do, whether or not they can actually go through with it. And in fact, in the last week alone, they've given signals that they think we should have even further cuts in the corporate tax rate. That's pretty alarming, given all the data we're citing here, but that's what their intention is. So both from a macro perspective and a micro perspective, there are threats that the current situation of the corporate income tax could get worse before it gets better.
Matt, where can people find out more about the report and look through it themselves?
It's on our website at www.itep.org, I-T-E-P.
And that is itep.org. Matt, we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for taking the time.
My guest has been Matt Gardner, Senior Fellow at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. We've been discussing the new report that he co-authored called Corporate Tax Avoidance in the First Year of the Trump Tax Law. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.